welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. I'm Sean, your host. I'm on my own without Robbie and Tom this week, and hope everybody is coping well with the lockdown and still holding strong, getting out for that exercise once a day, and everybody's surviving. It's news this week, not a lot going on, but there is big news in British terms is the death of Neil Black that happened today. I hear it was natural causes. He was 60, lots of tributes coming in for Neil and all the stuff he's done throughout his career. Very sad story, sad to hear that. Not much else, I guess, happening at the moment. We have got a really great interview today. We speak to Gemma Hillier-Moses. She is a runner. She's also a cancer survivor, and she is the founder of a charity called Move Charity. And she's going to give more detail than I can give right now on this in a minute. But have a listen here to her inspirational story. Here we go. On today's show, we're talking to Gemma Hillier-Moses. How are you doing, Gemma?
I'm good, thank you. And thank you for having me on the show today.
No, it's great to have you. And how's it going up near Loughborough with the lockdown? You surviving?
Yes, I think we were just chatting there. And yeah, you know, it's difficult at times. But I was saying to my husband last night, actually, Lewis, I was just saying that I'm actually quite getting used to lockdown life. And like we were just chatting that I guess I work from home and so does my husband anyway. So our day-to-day life, because we are both still working, hasn't really changed. And yeah, we're still able to get out and run and exercise, which, you know, is so good that we can still do that. Because I think I'd definitely be lost if we weren't able to use our exercise token. But other than missing family and friends. But, you know, coping. Yeah, I think we're coping pretty well with it.
And is there many more people out on the trails of Loughborough? Are you seeing loads of people out running, or is it dropped, I guess, as students have gone home?
Yeah, so definitely a drop in runners that in terms of students. Like, I don't think I've seen many runners at all, other than the odd couple. We live about, you know, 3 minutes from a trail, and there's definitely a lot more walkers going down that trail than there ever have been. I've seen people that I've never ever seen before. Yeah. And you can always spot the runners who have just started running because of lockdown. I think you can definitely see them from a mile. So although sometimes I'm like, oh, why is everyone out on my trail that's usually quiet and beautiful? But, you know, like, it's actually really good that people are getting out and exercising, because that's really important as well at this point in time.
Absolutely. And we're going to start with talk a little bit about what you're sort of doing at the moment and your running, but want to go back a bit to, I guess, your childhood. And were you quite an active child when you were growing up? Did you grow up in the area?
So I grew up in Leicestershire, in a place called Mount Thorough, which my parents still live, actually. And I was very lucky when I was younger in terms of sport was quite a big part of our life as a family. So not necessarily running, but my dad and my mum were, you know, my dad especially watched a lot of sports. So he having two girls kind of like brought us up as if he had two boys, really. He used to take us to the park to try and kick the rugby ball over the rugby post at like 5 years old. We used to do sports at school, had incredible PE teachers that just introduced us to that world of sport and never really came out of it. So I think I was very lucky to have really positive experiences of sport from such a young age.
Yeah,
probably transferred and kept me in sport during my life, really.
So when did the running come in, and when did you start like when did you start sort of entering a few races and doing that side of things?
So running started, I started in primary school, actually. So as most people do a cross-country race in primary school and probably don't enjoy it, which I don't think I did. Yeah. Getting told to run around a muddy field every other Saturday to get your school points was not really the idea of fun, but yeah. I guess it was always part of my life training at school, my life at school, really. And then when I was 15, I joined a club, but I remember about a year before that in secondary school, me and my friends just wanted to quit running. But I think, I guess I was quite good at it, but not, you know, nothing unreal, but good at it from a school level and in English school level. I guess I was often top 50 at English schools with some top 20 performances. So you're at the higher end of the country, really. But I guess from a more competitive point of view, was probably 15 upwards. And when I was 16, I actually went to train with the girls at Loughborough University. So I joined Bill Foster's group there. And that's where I probably discovered running, but I also discovered uni nights out. I was a bit younger than normal, I think. So I caught two realities there of like loving the new setup with meeting girls that were 4 years older than me, and then a bit of the reality of what uni life's like.
So they're dragging you along for big nights out?
So I went to some of the balls, yeah.
Okay.
That whatever happened there stays there. So so I went to the after-balls when I was a bit younger. But good experience. And actually, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to go to Loughborough Uni. And that's why I applied to go there. And even though it was close to home, I did move out of home. But running gave me... I guess running from the age of 15 gave me more than running, and I learned that pretty quickly, that it gave me friendships, which, you know, a lot of the girls I'm still really good friends with. It gave me trips abroad that I never would have had if I wasn't with running. So it was so much more than just fast times and competition. It was, yeah, I learned that pretty young, actually.
Yeah. And so you obviously you went then to Loughborough and you were enjoying your running. Were you there sort of around 2011? 2012, were you at Loughborough at the time?
No, make it, I'm a lot older than that.
Oh!
So 2006 to 2009, I think. Yeah, I graduated in 2009, I think. Yeah, that was what I'm trying to think when I was at uni. But I also took a semester in Australia, actually, as part of my degree. So I went out there for my second semester for 8 months. Wow.
And what was your idea then? So after Loughborough, were you looking for a career in sport? Did you think you could kind of make it as an athlete? What was your intention after finishing Loughborough?
So I never thought of running as a full-time career. I knew I was quite good at it, but I hadn't run internationally at that point. I'd struggled a lot with some biomechanical issues and injuries, probably through my university career, and I probably didn't give running the attention it needed in terms of lifestyle and dedication to S&C and sleep and all of that sort of stuff. Like, I looked after myself, but I what not what you'd do as a full-time athlete. So once I finished uni, it was looking for a career, and I was quite lucky that in my while I was in my last year of uni, I became a brand ambassador for Nike. So they did this around universities in the UK, and I became a brand ambassador and did quite a lot of work during my third year, and then was lucky enough to apply for a job and get the job at Nike. So I started out I actually started for England Athletics for 6 months, but then I went into a job at Nike as an Econ, which is a Nike spelt backwards, and it's like a tech rep, but they call it tech reps at Nike. So it's within the marketing department, but educating around product in stores, really. So that was where my career started at Nike, and I was with them for 6 years, and one of the most amazing companies. Well, actually, my main career was with a company was with them. So that's where really started, and my running still carried on alongside it. So what I saw was that I had to work full-time because I wasn't at the level of running that I could go to be a full-time runner, and I was fine with that because that's just the reality and what I thought was how you live your life. And I trained very hard, and I was very lucky. In I think it was in 2011 in the November, I actually moved coach to a guy called Alex Haynes, and it was one of the best decisions I've ever made because I had a lot of injuries through my university career and didn't really do much mileage, and so I don't know why I had these injuries and trained on grass, not always road. But I moved to Alex Haynes, and my running just started to go on this upward curve, and And within 4 months of being with him, so I couldn't really break 10 minutes for 3K on the track. And then with 4 months of being with him, I went to Armagh and ran 9:40 on the road. So I was like, wow, that's a big progression. So obviously what I was doing before wasn't right for me, and it wasn't working. And I was able to handle more miles, work on the conditioning area and drills, but also run better. So it just shows sometimes that your training was probably holding you back, or it wasn't actually right for you. And that's when when that happened, that's when I started to believe even more in myself that I had the potential if my body would, you know, if I could keep my body in one piece.
Yeah. And then was so 2011 was the also the year you found out you were ill? Was that soon after that breakthrough? How did that come about?
Yeah, so it was actually in early on in 2012. So I'd gone to Armagh and I'd ran that time. So I was in pretty good shape. And then in the March, I was at a work conference in London with Nike and I was coming back on the train. So there's two episodes that happened in 2012, which were pretty devastating, but the second one was obviously life-changing. But the first one, I was coming back on a train and often when they say, do you know when you can see the sign that says mind the gap between the train and the platform? Yeah. Well, I ended up falling down that gap coming off a train.
No.
Yeah. One of the most embarrassing things probably that's ever happened to me. But
yeah.
This is kind of the modern day where you're dragging your suitcases off this train. Nobody's helping you. You've got your phone in one hand because you texted somebody or looking at something. Definitely learned that lesson. And I just took my suitcase off and just went straight down between the platform and whacked my ankle on the way down. Well, my foot first, which basically broke my ankle. And I was on
the
truss. I was lying with my leg down under the train. I was like, please don't let this train go.
Did anyone see that, like the train, like not driver, but you know, the train manager, did they see you go down? The train wasn't due to go away, was it? You didn't have to try and pull yourself out in seconds flat.
No, so it could have been like that with a movie. No, luckily he obviously stopped the train. It would have gone in a couple of minutes and then a few people helped me up. And I was like, I'm fine, just very embarrassed. And then started walking and I was like, oh my gosh, my foot. I was like, I can't walk on this.
No.
And then unfortunately my husband had got locked out of our house, so couldn't come and get me because the car keys were in the house and he was outside locked out. So just a nightmare of an evening.
Yeah.
But ended up breaking my ankle in it's a place where if you don't have the right physio, so it was within the joint, and if you didn't have the right physio, I probably wouldn't have ever ran properly again. But luckily, I saw an incredible physio called Renee Thompson, who was working for British Athletics at the time, but I knew her personally and had some private treatment with her. But she's phenomenal as a physio, and she got me in for an operation within days. And then I had a pin in my ankle and then 10 weeks on crutches, which at the time when I was really fit, running well, and also had my career at Nike, was absolutely devastating. Like, I'm just
wondering,
what the hell has happened to me now? And then rehab was really like intense. So Renee had me in the pool for 4 hours a day. And I now know why I don't feel any issues with the ankle, because that rehab was just insane. It was just so good. And
4 hours a day. So how are you managing to work, live, everything else? How did you manage to fit that all in?
Well, it's amazing what you can do when you don't actually go outside running and training. You have so much more time than you thought you had. So, and obviously I worked most of the day, but it was limited because of, you know, not being able to drive anywhere and do anything. But then that rehab was just so important to be able to walk for one, but then actually to be able to get back, to give me a chance to get back running. And luckily I was able to do that. But the problem was when I was aqua jogging, I got back aqua jogging once I had my cast off after 10 weeks, and I ended up finding a lump in my neck. And I remember saying to one of my friends, I was like, oh, I've got this feels a bit hard, like I don't know what this is. And they were like, oh, maybe your glans is just up. And I went to the GP and she sent me away to the ear, nose and throat specialist actually at the hospital. And she said, it probably isn't, but it could be something like lymphoma, which is a form of cancer. But she said, don't Google it. Just go in 2 weeks, go to this appointment and they'll do an ultrasound and see if there's anything there. Mm. And unfortunately, they diagnosed it initially as a cyst. So I had a lump in my neck, and it was quite small at the time that they diagnosed as a cyst. So that year I was actually supposed to be working at the Olympics for Nike, so you could have an operation to remove this cyst, but because it was moving into the summer now, I was like, oh, I'll just wait till September. If it's not, you know, they said it's not any issues or any problems, then I'll just wait to September to get it removed. Then this cyst apparently just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it was huge on my neck by the time July came round. I was also, what I didn't know at the time as well, I was also experiencing quite bad stomach issues that I blamed on a Nando's I'd had.
Really?
Yeah, it lasted about 3 weeks. So now knowing the signs, but I was like, oh, this Nando's was just so dodgy when I had it in London. and then I probably had night sweats that I didn't really pay attention to or realise, because I was quite busy at the time. Like, I was back and forth from London. I was doing a lot of work. I was still trying to run. And then
it's hard though, because being a fit young woman, I wouldn't even think. I mean, I'm late 30s now, so I, you know, maybe I should start worrying about that stuff. But you'd never think you had cancer at that age. I bet it was just, it was, you don't fathom it really.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't know much. Like, you don't, unless you've had that illness in the family, which we hadn't. I didn't know anything about cancer. And so when somebody says, like, you get a health professional tell you that you've got a cyst, you believe that you've got a cyst. So why would you, you know, they've ultrasound it, they've diagnosed it, it's what they do every single day. Why would you question anything else? You just think, oh, maybe just cysts grow a bit. That's just because they can do as well. So like you say, I was fit, I was healthy. I didn't know, you know, I was 24 years old at the time. There's no way that I would put it down to having cancer. But what happened was, I was in Amsterdam with work with Nike, and I just remember one night putting my hand on my neck, and I just felt this sensation. I was like, this needs to be removed right now. I was just, I was getting so tired. I was getting headaches. It was aching like hell. And I just remember holding my neck being like, I need to get this out. And I rang, luckily I had private health insurance with Nike actually. So luckily I was able to ring the consultant to say, can I just get an operation ASAP? Like, I can't last with this any longer. So I booked in early July, and so it's only a few days after I rang them, and I went in for the operation. So again, it was an invasive operation, because if you're taking a cyst out, you've got to operate on your neck, which I've still got a scar on, but luckily, you know, it depends on which consultant you get from how well they do the scar, but luckily that scar's, you know, you can't see it, it's in my neckline. But they went to take out the cyst, and I woke up in the morning with a massive tube coming out of my neck, and, you know, feeling pretty drowsy and horrendous. And I turned to my husband, and I felt something, and I was like, I don't think that lump's gone. So I looked at him and I was like, is that lump still there? And he was like, yeah, but the nurse is going to come back to kind of explain what's going on. And so Denise really knew. And then the consultant came back in the room and said, look, we haven't been able to take this cyst out because it's not a cyst. So it's one of eight things, and one of them was TB, so tuberculosis, and one of them was cancer. And then there was another number of things that he said. He said, we won't know what it is until we do a biopsy. So, and at this time, my parents were actually away cycling in France. So I rang my mum and I was like, don't worry, I'm sure it's nothing. Like, even that night when I got back from hospital, I went round to my friend's barbecue because I was I just didn't, you just don't think it's going to be something life-threatening. And then 3 days later, I got called into the consultant's office, and my mum and dad came with me, and they basically just said, Gemma, you've got cancer. And I've got a form called Burkitt's lymphoma, which is a really, you know, really rare form of cancer that's usually only found in African countries across this lymphoma belt. But it's also usually only caused by HIV and another virus. And actually, so that I didn't have any of those, obviously, but they can't tell you why you've got it, but unfortunately, it not just gone from my neck. So it was in my neck, but it was also in my abdomen and bowel. And I think I had 13 centimeter tumors in my abdomen and bowel area, which,
God.
Yeah. So within that short, because lymphoma spreads extremely aggressively around the body, this is the issue. So if it was left for another month, I just wouldn't be here. Like, that's just the reality of it. But if it had been left for another week and treated, it had gone into my spinal cord and brain as well, so which making it uncurable, really. So that is also the reality of being misdiagnosed, because had it been diagnosed correctly early March, this it would have been on a different story, and not have to go through the treatment that I went through. So it's, yeah, it's shocking that you can get misdiagnosed, but also that at 24 that you can get cancer in that.
Yeah.
Hugely life-threatening.
And yeah. How did they sort of, did they tell you that it was, at that stage, was it like a serious threat to your health? Were you, was there like any, did you think you might die?
Yes, yeah. So I, well, that was my first question to the consultant. And I, and the more I talk about it, like I, because it's been 8 years, I'm okay talking about it, but it still gets me, because I just, you know, I sat there in front of my mum and dad and just said, you know, am I going to die? And,
God.
And the consultant said, look, like we've got extremely good consultant in Loughborough, in Leicester, who we know is a specialist in this area. You'll be in very good hands. We don't know the outcome because you don't know what you can, you don't know how your body's going to respond. You don't, they know they've done the biopsy, but they don't know the state of the cancer fully, if that makes sense, at that point in time. So all they say to you is that, well, we're going to get you on a treatment that's right for you, and hopefully, you know, you'll get through it, but there's no guarantees either way. But the reality of how aggressive it was, I started treatment 2 days later.
So wow.
I went into hospital for a 5-week isolation period in a bone marrow unit. So I didn't have a bone marrow transplant, but because of the nature of my chemotherapy was so aggressive, I was in isolation for 5 weeks because they had to basically flush all the tumours straight through the body, which one, pretty dangerous for me to have to go through, and the body to be able to cope with. But it meant that nobody could come and visit me if they had any form of illness or sickness. So my sister had this dye in her eye and she couldn't come anywhere near me. So she just had to look from the glass inwards, I guess. And luckily my husband, Lewis was my partner at the time, but he stayed in hospital with me pretty much every day, and my parents. Yeah. So I was very, very lucky having that support. But, you know, looking back now, I can imagine myself right now on the bed in the hospital taking that aggressive cocktail of chemotherapy, and your life just, it just changes within a second, which I guess probably why I can cope with lockdown quite well, because being fit and healthy and fine in lockdown is nothing compared to what I experienced in a lockdown isolation when I first started chemo.
Wow. And I was going to ask if that was your darkest moment, I guess, or what your darkest moment was, I guess that might have been it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and I think it's really difficult when people say about your darkest moment, because I spoke to my friend and she's a psychologist, and you have ups and downs in life. And actually, when I first started my treatment, I took all the skills and the tools that I'd learned from sport, actually. So what was so important was that I knew my body was fit and healthy so that it could handle what it was being given. And that's in cancer and cancer treatment, that's huge, because I was given a cocktail of very aggressive drugs that only a body that can handle it, that's fit and healthy, that's after themselves, would be able to tolerate and get through. Obviously there are anomalies to that, because you don't always know how your body's going to respond, but I had faith in my body that it was going to hopefully be there for me. I went into a tunnel vision kind of approach of going, I just need to get myself through this, and I just need to focus on each day as it comes. Like, don't think about 6 months in the line of, am I going to get through this, what's the end outcome. Just focus every single day, focus on that process and what I needed to do. And I was very lucky, like my parents and my sister all have that similar mindset, and Lewis is huge on mindset, and what he talks about and how it transfers to me is just amazing, really, because he was so positive, also took the piss out of me most days around yeah. as well. So I guess dark times of like going through stuff. So one of them, I guess, was watching my mum and dad have sat next to me when I had this cocktail of chemotherapy very early on, and I just saw my dad's face as my body had this, you know, this reaction of going fully red, shaking, because you're given an aggressive drug and a toxic drug. And I just remember looking at my dad and just feeling so sad that they had to go through that. Often when you're the one going through it, it's horrific for you, but you are also in control of what's going on, I guess, because it's you. Whereas often I always think it can be harder for the people supporting you and those that are around you, because they can't control your emotions and how you feel, and they just want to be there for you, but you don't know if they are, or they don't know how to help. And that pains me when I feel like other people have to go through that emotionally. So yeah, I guess there were really dark times, but I'd say that I think what I'd learned in life before that had really helped me to cope with what I was entering into at that period of time.
And one mad thing you did, moving to something more lighthearted, is you actually ran the Great North Run after that first bout of chemotherapy. How did you manage that?
Yeah, so that was an interesting, how that came about was quite interesting. So I'd actually done 3 rounds of chemotherapy by then. So that's how aggressive this type of cancer is. You've got to go through them pretty quickly with very little break. So often people have a round of chemotherapy and come out of it for quite a few weeks and then go again. Whereas mine was pretty much trying to get it in the week after I'd finished that last round. But what happened was we were cycling, so I needed some so you have a Hickman line in, which is to put your chemotherapy through, which is a line that inserts into the main vein, or no, main artery near the heart. So that's a painful experience, as it is getting that fitted. Christ, they don't put you to sleep, they just locally numb the area and then whack this massive tube into near your heart area. And when you first start your treatment, that and a bone marrow biopsy, where they take bone from your hip while you're still awake, is the most interesting I've ever experienced. So that was interesting. They lie you down, give you gas and air, put this massive clamp on your hip, manage to get in somehow and take bone from it, and you can see the bone once they've finished. It's horrific. I've never experienced anything like it. Probably why I've got quite a good pain threshold now. But anyway, the Great North Run. So we were cycling to the hospital, as you do, to get my antibiotics because I'd had a slight infection. And when you turn up with your helmet on and your bike, the consultants are like, "What are you doing?" But, you know, that's how we rolled at that period of time. But we were on the way there, and Lewis was on the bike, and he was like, "Gemma, wouldn't it be amazing if you did the Great North Run to raise money?" So they were building a teenage and young adult unit, a teenage cancerous unit at the hospital. So at that point in time, I was treated on an adult ward, and other hospitals around the country had these units built, which were really, really nice units specific to children and young people. So I think from the ages of 16 to 25. And they just had games rooms, like all the nurses were specific to young adults, and it was just a really good thing. But they needed a lot of funding to build them, so Leicester hadn't had one at the time, and they were raising money, doing an Our Space appeal to actually raise money to get this unit built. And Lewis just basically said, "Gemma, you've got cancer, you'll raise loads of money if you go and do this." And I said, "Yeah, that's the point. I've got cancer. You don't have. I have to do this to run it." Then once that entered my head, I was like, "Okay, go on then, I'll do it." And we put it to my luckily, actually, my consultant was away at the time. And so I put it to the registrar, and he's absolutely brilliant. And he was like, he thought about it for a second. And he was like, "Well, do you feel like you have to do this?" And I was like, "Yes, I feel like I have to do this." And he said, "Well, we wouldn't usually advise it, but because you've been a runner before, I think it will be okay." Yeah. So I got my entry, I set up my fundraising page. And 3 weeks later, my consultant came back, and she's absolutely brilliant. And she was like, "I can't believe he's allowed you to do this." And now she's a trustee on a charity. And now I know that her husband said that night she went home and drank about 5 glasses of wine, because she's like, "One of my patients has just told me they're running a half marathon during this treatment." So I did that. But I one of the main things was that it gave me a focus away from cancer. And when you have cancer, your life just gets completely turned upside down, and everything pretty much is taken out of your control. So what it gave me was to focus around the fundraising. I think that was the most important thing. So I was, you know, I was refreshing my fundraising button every morning, just checking at like what we'd got up to, and that, you know, that really motivated me to know that I was doing the right thing. And training wise wasn't really going anywhere, because when I came out of hospital after that 5 weeks, I did a I did a 30-minute run, which I was advised not to do, but I just said, you know, I'm going to listen to my body and do it. And it turned out fine. Like, the consultant, one of the consultants was like, a guy with the same cancer as you hasn't ran for a year post chemotherapy. So I didn't get the right answer from him. So I went and asked the nurse, as you do. You go, fine, who's going to give you what you want? And she just said, just go for a walk and see what happens. And so I just put my running kit on, went for 30 minutes, and it was fine. But then the more treatment you have, the harder it gets. And I remember a couple of weeks before the Great North Run, I went out for what I was going to do, a 6-mile run. And within a mile, I just couldn't run. I was exhausted, knackered. I was, you know, it takes a lot out of you. So I just turned around and walked back. So in reality, I didn't do probably more than 2-3 miles in the last 5 weeks before the half marathon.
Wow. And how did you get through it then? How did you manage to run 13?
Well, yeah, I think that was a bit of sheer stubbornness and determination. I think because I'd actually finished, so I'd had this really aggressive chemo cycle, which has this drug called methotrexate. And so I had that 3 days before the Great North Run. So I was in hospital for 3 days. And that's where you're linked up to this drug for 2 days, I think it is, and it causes horrendous blisters on the top of your mouth, but it's very, you know, it's pretty toxic. And then my blood counts were really low, so on the I was like, I'm definitely running the Great North Run. So on the Saturday I went back to the hospital and they had to give me a blood transfusion. Not like this was legal for me because my hemoglobin was like just to let me to be able to breathe. So I had that blood bag and they were like, I think you need another one to be able to breathe a bit more. I was like, I'm fine, I need to go up north to stay with Lewis's parents to run this Great North Run. So we got on the day and it was, you know, it was an amazing feeling to be able to know that I was going to achieve something while going through treatment that wasn't just to cure the cancer I had or to get rid of the cancer I had. Strange thing that, because you think, you know, your priority is to get rid of this cancer and that it doesn't really matter what else happens during this period of time. But for me, it just gave me that control and that normality that I needed. And, you know, at the time I lost all my hair. I had a bald head. I ran in a cap. You know, there's a lot of issues that you go through in terms of your identity that you just completely lose. But for me, running that Great North Run was my proudest ever sporting achievement because what it did show was that your body could be at its lowest that it's ever been in terms of its health. But actually, when your mind wants to do something, you will be able to achieve it. And I didn't enjoy any part of the Great North Run. I remember I made the classic mistake of going off a little bit too hard because I just had a lot of excitement. So I started off at 8-minute miling. And if you haven't trained for God knows, and then you've got cancer and you're going through chemo, it's probably not a good idea.
No.
So I remember hitting 10 miles and drinking about 4 Powerades, just getting them down me. But I had my mum, dad and my sister with me. Lewis was actually injured at the time, so he was on the front of the press truck. But I got to the, you know, stopped, had an interview with Denise Lewis, and then Just Giving Page went up about 10 grand, which was amazing because it was on BBC. And just got to the end and just, you know, just had that proud feeling of an achievement considering what was going on in between, you know, in between chemotherapy cycles with 3 still to go with cancer in your body. But yet we raised 25,000 for this teen and young adult unit, knowing that in future it was going to support other people like me. And I think that was an amazing part of the journey that I will never forget. And whatever I achieve in my running career, nothing beats that because it's just, you just learn so much about yourself during that. Well, I learned so much about myself during that period of time that I'd have never learned it if it hadn't happened to me.
Yeah. And following that, did you continue to keep running through the remainder of your treatment?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it running compared to what I did. So we really advocate this as a charity now. So exercise and movement is so important. I'd probably say I moved more than I ran. I mean, I didn't have any toenails after that Great North Run. So I had to have a bit of time off. But so during the rest of my treatment, I tried to do little bits of home workouts. I walked, I did a little bit of running, but it was very much, I was just on such aggressive treatment. And And the issue with mine was that I had long hospital stays, or right. like 2 weeks of in hospital. So it was very hard to do anything really. But movement, even if I wasn't doing it in my head, I knew how important it was to get back to it properly
yeah.
as soon as I'd finished my treatment. So actually, as soon as I finished my treatment and I went into remission, I started running with my mum, and I remember running 11, 12 minute miling and having to stop after 5 minutes because it was so hard. I don't think I've ever been in that position, being a runner. For me, because that, like, you know, it's relative. People run that time and that's fine, but it's relative to what I was running. And, you know, 7 minute miling was easy pre-cancer. So I just remember realizing the reality of the journey that I had to make to come back into running.
So after that, so when you obviously you finished your treatment, long hours, how long did it take the in its entirety?
It was actually only 6 months, the treatment, so okay. which is a good thing, but then because it was so aggressive, it just has to be done so quickly. So I was in remission, and by January I was off any medication and obviously still being checked every like month, I think, initially, because of it could come back so quickly. It would come back in the first year.
And what were you thinking then in terms of your running? So you said you started then running and it was really tough. What were you, did you sort of want to return to where you got to, or what was your kind of your relationship with running at that stage when you just sort of kind of gone through that experience?
Yeah, it is weird actually. So when I was running with my mum, all I was just trying to do was get fit. But I always had in my mind I would get back running. It's all I know. And
yeah.
And I you know, before I was diagnosed with cancer, I liked running. It wasn't the be all and end all, but I love competition, I love challenging myself, but I don't think I appreciate it as much post-cancer. Whereas post-cancer, I realised that my body was there for me when I needed it to be. And that it's really important to look after my body and my mind and to keep it fit and healthy. But I also realized how much I love being challenged. And, you know, if that's with other people or just against myself. And I was very lucky to be surrounded by a family who get sport and who have that similar mindset. Also with Lewis and his running, he was still running. And then my coach at the time, Alex Haynes, just had that belief in me that we could get back. And the biggest thing that changed was my mental, you know, my mindset around running was that before, I mean, I didn't know early on because I wasn't racing, but I just appreciated it so much. And I appreciated being outside, and I appreciated being able to use my body, because I'd just spent 6 months in a basically cooped up in a hospital fighting for my life. And I think that's, you know, those little drivers kept me going. And I actually built up not quite quickly, but I got back fit pretty quickly, because in the summer I actually did a track season, because it was it was the only thing. I just started doing some tempos, some reps, and built up really gradually, but fitness just came quite quickly. And I guess I think it was just being relaxed, knowing my body, just running to feel and not putting any pressure on myself. And then I went to do a track race at Watford. I remember going down early summer, and I just wasn't nervous for it. I just felt so lucky to be stood on that start line. And I remember looking around and thinking, you know, you put so much pressure on yourself for races, but for reality for the last year, I am so happy and glad to just be stood at this track, able to use my body to just see what it can do. And I ended up running a PB over 3K. So not way.
Yeah. The first race back.
Yeah. So not as fast as I ran at Armagh, but I ran 9:48. First race after, you know, 4-5 months after treatment. So that was kind of strange, but that just gave me faith that, you know, my body was ready to do what it wanted to do. So my mind was in a completely different place to what it used to be, and I was just so much more relaxed about running. I was loving it. I just appreciated it a lot more.
Yeah. And so you went on to be selected for England. What was the event for?
So I raced, I went indoors actually. I ran in Bratislava, so I won the BMC indoor race in January. I ran 419, I think, for that, and got selected to race for England in Bratislava, and the same year I ran in Armagh for England as well. So I had never raced indoors before that season either.
Wow. So, and what was that like then? So from that moment, from kind of almost, you know, almost dying to then pulling on the shirt, what did it feel like to put on the England vest?
It was just incredible. It was an incredible feeling. And, it wasn't at a champs or anything like that. But for me, it was like, yeah, you'd been through this journey where you didn't even think you were going to be here anymore, to then running better than you've ever ran. And I was running better than I've ever ran pre-cancer. So I never got England vest pre-cancer. But yeah, a year and a half post finishing treatment, I was there getting an England vest and in the best shape of my life. And, you know, it was an incredible feeling, but it felt like a journey with a number of different people who were part of that team. So it wasn't just me on my own. So my husband, my mum and dad and my sister, and then my coach, Alex Haynes, you know, his mindset and his belief in me just is the reason why it happened. And I just remember it's like starting, like I never ran before, and it's like being an excited kid starting running again and just loving every minute of it. And I think that's why I ran so well, because I just stood on the start line just saying to myself, you know, just relax, you know, don't fear failure. I think that was one of the biggest things of actually, it doesn't matter what happens, just do the best that you can do on that day. And it was paying off, and it paid off to such an extent that I went on a PB, we call it a PB train, for 2 years. So yeah. I ran PBs every single race I raced for 2 years after that, which is mad.
That's incredible. Just that relaxation was so important.
Yeah, and it is incredibly important. I mean, it's not, you know, the further I got away from that situation and having cancer, the harder that perspective is. So like,
yeah,
you know, now when I line up, I have to remind myself that, you know, it's important, but it's not also the be all and end all. And if you relax, you're more likely to run better. So I'm the type of athlete who, like, even before races, I need to be distracted. I need to have a laugh with people. I need to just relax. I don't need to be in this zone where I just don't talk to anyone. I zone out, because it that's just not the way my brain works. And the happier I am, the more relaxed I am, the better our race. So I guess that's just helped over the last few years, really.
Great. And let's talk a little bit about the charity. So it's called Move. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so kind of give us a bit of background. Where did the idea for Move come about? Obviously, through your treatment. When did you start thinking about sort of something you could give back?
So the idea really came around initially when I was told by a consultant when I first finished my 5 weeks of treatment in hospital that I wouldn't be running a year post chemotherapy, and the fact that I went out for that run that evening and was like, I know my body and this feels good, and it felt good for my body and my mind, regardless of being on toxic treatment for the last 5 weeks. And I think although I wasn't able to run anywhere near the amount that I used to run, just maintaining small amounts of movement and activity and having goals in my head for the future kind of just really, really, really helped. And for me also, I do believe being fit and healthy pre-diagnosis helped me through my treatment. So I had, in between treatment cycles, I didn't have many infections, which are often the issue. So people, you know, your white blood cell count goes pretty much to zero and people pick up infections, and that's why treatment takes longer. And actually I got one at the end when my body was at its lowest, and I really realized the importance of, you know, physical activity on your health, but on your physical health and your mental health. And so I realized it from a personal perspective, from the journey I went on through running the Great North Run and through my treatment, and then also building back into exercise. I realized that it helped me not let cancer define who I was, especially in the year post treatment. So I wasn't supposed to get back running personal best, running for England. Like, that's not the typical journey. But I believed, because I started running, I started being active, I just realized that it was helping my body. Like, it was reducing the side effects of treatment, it was building my bone density, my muscle mass, it was helping me with my self-esteem, my confidence, my mental health, and my cardiovascular fitness. Like, all of those things are so important to be able to function in life. People take them massively for granted. Like, it's been known now that exercise, if it was a pill, every single one of us would be taking it. And I think that, you know, back 8 years ago when I was diagnosed, there wasn't as much evidence around exercise and cancer. So I was purely doing that from a personal perspective and then talking to others who had used exercise and been through the same journey. But now there's a wealth of evidence that's out there that basically, so Australia have come out, Australia Oncology Association have come out and said, you know, it's actually like safer to exercise than it is to not. It's actually unsafe to be sitting down the whole time through your treatment. You know, exercise is such a powerful tool for us, and it differs for everybody. We're all into different activities. There are people who may have never exercised before their cancer, but it actually should now be part of everybody's treatment program. And you know, I do recognize that there were times where I was in hospital for 5 weeks and I literally couldn't get out of bed because I was that poorly. But on the days that I was able to move, I moved. And that's just so important. And the evidence shows it now. It's huge. That's why there's quite a few of us and different organizations trying to pull together to really educate not only people affected by cancer, but also health professionals around exercise and cancer and its benefits. Because the issue we've got is when you're having cancer, you have, when you're going through treatment or you're diagnosed, you work with your consultants and nurses and health professionals, and they are where you get your teachable moments. So you often hang on to every single thing they say to you. And if a health professional hasn't had a positive experience of exercise, that could then influence what they talk and tell you about the benefits of exercise during your cancer journey. So
yes.
I think there's a, you know, for us as a charity, there's our services and initiatives that we do. So our online program for children and young people is all about, it's a cancer rehab program, helping them to build their foundations. We have 5K Away Move Against Cancer program, where we're across 57 groups across the UK and Ireland linked to Parkrun. So we meet on the last 3 months. So they're fantastic initiatives to help people affected by cancer. But there's also an element of getting health professionals to come along to our 5K Away groups and educate them on the importance of exercise in relation to cancer. And that's a long, like, took us a long story short, that's the nature of the charity and what we do. But for me, I'm just incredibly passionate about that work because I've been through it from a personal perspective and seen the, you know, seen the benefits of movement, physical activity and exercise. But I've been a cancer rehab specialist and I've worked with children and young people, and I've just seen the positive life changing effects that this support can give them. And for me, it was like, I didn't get the support I needed to be able to build myself back into any form of exercise. And I didn't think it was right that people weren't getting that support. So what we wanted to provide was support that the NHS couldn't provide, but also support that would help people to lay those foundations to go on to do whatever they wanted to do in life and hopefully have a better life from it and not let cancer define and ruin their life in the process.
Great. And is there ways that we can, like, as runners and as, is there, can we support kind of the stuff you're doing? Is there any ways that we as the public can make a contribution?
Yeah, definitely. So obviously we're going through pretty difficult time at the minute with lockdown in terms of fundraising. So often we encourage people to create their own challenges or run races and support us as a charity. We look for businesses to choose us as charity of the year, and that's the way you can support. But at the moment, some of those things are limited with being in lockdown. And we know, we spoke about this before we, you know, started the podcast, but our cancer rehab services are increasing in demand by around 50% at the moment and being referred into from the NHS health professionals because they are so important right now. Our service demand has gone through the roof, but yet our income has reduced by 60% compared to last year. So, and a lot of charities most charities are in a very similar situation. But one incredible thing, because I was thinking about that when we spoke last week, and one thing that London Marathon have put on now is the 2.6 challenge, which is we put it out on Facebook and our social media, and we're going to put more information about it in the next couple of days. But they basically, because the London Marathon's cancelled, all, you know, UK charities really, really need your support, and you're able to select which charity you want to support. And the idea is to really challenge yourself. So do a 2.6 challenge, and that literally can be whatever you want it to be. So I think it's a really cool idea, because charities, you know, like us, we're a very small charity, to have the capacity to do loads of virtual events and things at this period of time is really, really difficult for us as a team to be able to create those fundraising activities. But this challenge is, anyone can take part of it. You can then choose the charity you want to support. So hopefully people would choose Move, and then you can just be part of a challenge that's across the UK, and it's done through Virgin Giving and Just Giving as well.
So, okay, great. So can we find that on, I think I've seen some links to it on various social media pages, but is it 26 your way, or what's the
No, so it's a 2.6 challenge, actually. So it's not, we haven't named the challenge. It's London Marathon that have put the challenge forward. So you'll see people doing it for different charities. So our social media on Twitter is Move Charity, and the same on Facebook. So you'll be able to find it on those pages. And then I'm actually just in the process of popping it on our website. So in the next couple of days, it will be up on our website. So you'll be able to click the links and then see how you can get involved.
Great. Get out and do it, everybody. Is it on the day of the London Marathon, the day it was scheduled? Is it around that time?
Yeah,
this weekend.
Yeah, so it's scheduled for around this time, so that people can be getting involved. But some people have already started their challenges, and but it's great, because I think loads of people are getting involved for different charities, supporting them that are close to your heart. And hopefully, you know, people can look on our social media. We put case studies from the work that we're doing, from our children and people, from our 5K away group, so you can see how important our work is, and hopefully people will then look to support us moving forward. So that'd be great.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
we'll put some links to your site on our show notes and stuff, so people can find it through there if they have any problems. Fantastic. Well, I know I've kept you for a long time, so I've got three quick fire questions. to finish off, I can't leave without asking you those, and they were, but they are, I guess, Leicestershire's close to your heart, so I might know the answer to the first one. But if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
Oh, Morzine, 100%. So not Leicestershire. So I know it's a quick fire, but I love to talk. But we found one of our friends lives in Morzine, actually. So we've been there. We went there last summer, and then we actually went skiing for the first time this January, and it's just a place that I love running. The routes are amazing. I feel up in the mountains, I just feel free. And it's, me and my husband both absolutely love it there.
I think I've been on last summer, I had a challenge to try and get back into mountain running. And the races out there in the summer are just amazing. Just being out there is incredible. But I guess the problem is, the more people talk about it, and the more great how, you know, the more people are effusive about it, the more people will be up there, and the less sort of wild and remote it will be. But anyway, it's a beautiful spot. If you get a chance, go out there, I reckon.
Well, I think as well, when you're saying, I definitely don't mountain run. If you've ever seen me try to run down a mountain, my husband and I have to wait for about an hour by the time I am the compact gravel trail or road. Like, there's no, I mean, I don't mind going up a mountain. I'm just not, I may as well be walking down and running and running up. But like you say, yeah, when we went last year, the is it UTMB was on?
Yeah.
At the time, so we went over to Chamonix and watched that, and the festival feel was just incredible. Really, did make me want to do it, actually. But I was like, as long as it's all a nice trail, which I don't think it.
And our second quickfire question is: can you recommend us something? Could be a book, an experience, anything really.
So I mean, I do a lot of reading, and I love reading. So I read any type of book. One of my favourites is psychotic thrillers, which me and my friend are really into, but I'm not going to recommend that type of book. But I have just read Meb's 26 Marathons. So I can't pronounce his surname, but absolutely brilliant.
Kofletsky, is that right? Kofletsky, Meb Kofletsky. Anyway,
Yeah, if you search 26 Marathons on Amazon, it should come through. But I ordered it at the start of lockdown, and it was brilliant, actually. And I'm at the stage in my running career where I am thinking about marathons, because I went to a lot last year with my husband. We went to watch a lot of people. We went to Berlin and London, and I did Kilda Half Marathon up north. And I just love the atmosphere of the moorland and just the, you know, the people and the spirit and everything about it. And I was like, I'm fed up of running on tracks, going to races where there's nobody there and it's boring.
Yeah.
It's just getting a time and there's no heart to it. There's nothing about it. And I was like, all these fun runners are able to run marathons and I just want to be part of that. So reading Meb's book also kind of highlights the, you know, how amazing those sort of marathons and races are. So I would recommend reading that because I think, especially during lockdown, it's quite an inspiring book that will keep you motivated with your running as well.
Great, because we need that, because I'm not sure we're going to have any marathons this autumn. So yeah, maybe keep your marathon inspiration going until we might think about it next year. But hey, definitely. And I should say our final question is, in your opinion, what is the greatest endurance performance of all time?
Oh, I'm not really a running geek, so you need my husband to answer this question. Not that he's a running geek, but he's clued up in things. Mine's got to be Paula Radcliffe's world record in the marathon. Like, I just, you know, I just love everything about Paula, and the way she ran is just, throughout her whole current running career, was just incredible. And you know, I know Paula personally, and her, you know, her spirit, her determination, her passion for running is just something that you don't see in many people. So I think watching that race and just seeing her run that time, that still hasn't really, no one's got anywhere. Oh no, they have now. I was like, no one's got anywhere near. And then I was like, oh no.
they got there with the moon, the Nike moon shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it doesn't really count. No, it doesn't. I do wear them. So I'm not against it. That would be Paula's world record in the marathon would be my number one.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time. And it's been really good to chat, and good luck with the charity going forward. And hopefully you'll see some a boost in sort of fundraising this week with the 2.6 challenge this weekend. But good luck with it going forward.
And thank you very much for having me on and having a chat. I realise I do talk a lot, so hopefully, yeah.
It's all good. Cheers, Gemma.
Thank you. Bye.